Guess who's back? Back again. Tell a friend. That's right. Julian Lawrence is back. It's the Gab and Jules Show. We are very excited to be with you. Glad that you could join us. Welcome back, Jules. Enough of you, because you can go to Jules' social media to follow his adventures on holiday. Let's get right into it, because we got a lot to get through. La Liga is starting up this weekend. The Premier League is starting up this weekend. We're going to have quick hits as well. Man, it feels like only yesterday that they were still playing, but hey.
Only yesterday.
This is the world in which we live. And should we get Mark Ogden on to help us sort out what to expect in the Premier League?
Yes, let's have him on.
And through the magic of television, there he is. Augie, welcome.
Hi, guys.
Now, I don't want to play the stereotype, but you said that there's something that's making you grumpy and irritable and northern this morning. Do you want to get this out of the way?
Yeah, listen, I'm still 12 hours on. I'm still so angry that England have announced a friendly in November with New Zealand. You know, it's like they're 122nd in the world. Gareth Southgate said less than 2 weeks ago that English football needs to be collaborative to ensure that players don't get to the Euros burnt out. And they're playing New Zealand behind closed doors in November at Wembley. What is the point of that? There'll be so many withdrawals in that game. They've also got to play Belgium and Iceland in that international break. Three games in November when players need
a rest. It doesn't really make sense. He's right. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, but also we gave him 30 seconds to talk about an irrelevant match, which he says is irrelevant, in late November while we're supposed to be previewing the Premier League, which I think one or two more people. You've said your piece, Augie. I agree with you. We all agree.
Move on now. You can move on.
We can move on. Obvious question to start.
I can move on.
Is it a two-horse race, Jules?
It is a two-horse race between Liverpool and Manchester City again for the third season in a row. But you would expect Chelsea to get closer. And I think the big objective for Chelsea has to be closing that gap a little bit as much as they can. I still think it's too early for them to be proper title contenders. But you certainly expect them to be maybe far closer than what they were last year to Liverpool, of course, and to City. But you know, in a, let's say, between 5 and 10 points, I think that's where I expect them to finish at the end of the season. Third, 5 or 10 points behind whoever wins it between City and Liverpool. City and Liverpool.
Okay, I assume you're on board with that, so I'm not going to ask you to repeat everything that Jules just said. But this is what I want to know. Was the gap between City and Liverpool last season, is it as big as the point spread suggests, or were they actually much closer? And does that mean that City, who of course thus far, and you know, the transfer window is still open, but I've added Nathan Ake and Ferran Torres, that they actually start on an equal footing with Liverpool.
Yeah, look, I don't think that the gap is as big as the points suggest it was. It was a freak season for Liverpool last year, certainly until the shutdown in March. They were winning games ridiculously consistently until the Watford game. But I think they start the season much closer. I think City have probably gone ahead of Liverpool in the sense that Liverpool haven't strengthened. And I got the impression with Liverpool towards the end of last season that there were one or two games where you felt that they needed a bit of an injection of new blood, a bit of a change, but just somebody to kind of bring a different emphasis to them. And they haven't done that yet. They brought in a left-back who's basically cover for Andy Robertson. So I think City move ahead of them a little bit. I think City will miss Leroy Sané, but he didn't play last season, so you know that's not a massive loss. But I do disagree with Jules slightly. I think Chelsea can be closer than he thinks. I think it can be three-horse race. I just think that, you know, Chelsea have made so many attacking signings that they will blow most teams away. And if they can get results against the big teams, then Chelsea can actually compete.
Well, so, okay, on that point, let's transition to Chelsea here, because what gets me is I think chemistry does matter. Especially, it's great to be attacking, but unless your attacks are the way you play, unless you're tactically coordinated, you're going to give up chances at the other end. And we saw that a little bit last season. So it takes time to build chemistry and to build mechanisms. And when I look at this, and Chelsea are obviously a much more talented squad, they have an enormous squad. Again, the window's still open. I think one or two guys might leave. But I ask myself, if we had to guess now what his starting 11 is going to look like, I genuinely think that apart from Ben Chilwell and maybe N'Golo Kanté, if he stays, I don't know anybody else who's guaranteed a starting spot in this team. And what I mean, obviously we can debate this, but what I'm driving at is he's going to have to manage a very big squad with a lot of players who are used to playing time. It really is a double-edged sword, isn't it, Jules?
But you mean in terms of rotation? So, for example, if they play against a certain opposition, then he could change and pull.
Well, he's going to do one or two things, right? We see this all the time when you have big squads. Either you end up rotating continuously, which has pros and cons. Players stay fresh, you're unpredictable, blah, blah, blah. Or you stick to a core of 15, 16 players, and then you deal with players who are generally well-paid, highly regarded, and who aren't happy. And then you have to manage them and say, oh, look, hey, it's a League Cup game against Rochdale. Here's your chance, Ross. You know, it's a skill. Some managers can do it. This is a very young manager. I think it's a test for him.
Yeah, and I agree with you. However, I cannot see how Timo Werner, he's not guaranteed to start in that team. And same with Kai Havertz. Why would you leave them on the bench? Yeah, I mean, you might be at the beginning to give them a bit of time to settling in and to adapt, maybe to have a look and to understand how things work and etc. But they're your two best players, right? So unless you put Giroud when you play against a team that will sit really deep and play with a very low block and you want a lot of crosses and he's obviously much better than Timo Werner in the air, and then you play. But other than that, Werner is your number nine starter.
You would pick
Giroud or Abraham or Batshuayi ahead of Timo Werner.
I wouldn't pick Batshuayi. I think Batshuayi is moving on.
So you would pick Abraham or Giroud ahead of Timo Werner.
I think there's situations when maybe you put Timo Werner on the left, depending on how quickly they pick up what you want to do. Timo Werner has been there. He's been training with the team. Kai Havertz, for example, just arrived. That's a different one. Kai Havertz also much more difficult, you know, not really an orthodox player.
I think the highlights, what you're saying, it just highlights how much the pressure on Lampard is.
Right.
It's going to be huge pressure.
Enough Chelsea. We need to talk about the biggest team in the world, the most famous team in the world. United finished fourth last season. What's a realistic objective this year? Like, does he have to finish third to show forward progress? Can he finish third?
Well, if he finishes third, he's not moved far because he finished third last season. So it's basically par, isn't it?
But third, fourth, come on, man.
I think the best that United can hope for this year, realistically, is fourth. I don't think they've made the investment in the squad to elevate them ahead of Chelsea, who've done a proper job this summer. So I think fourth is the best they can hope for. And obviously, United will say, well, you know, we're Man United, we should challenge for the title. They're not going to challenge for the title. It's a tough season for Solskjaer, it's because they haven't made the investment required. You know, we saw the Europa League game against Sevilla 86 minutes before he made a change because he didn't have the squad. He still doesn't have the squad. He signed Donny van der Beek, who's a good addition, but that's, in a way, he's kind of strengthened an area where they were already okay. They haven't added to the back four yet, and the back four is in desperate need of reinforcements.
There's no way.
Jules, you have some eloquent thoughts to add on the teams we've already covered?
The only thing about Liverpool is we've seen with City how difficult it was to have three pretty incredible seasons in a row. So they had the season at 100 points, then they had the season at 98 points, just beating Liverpool to the title by 1 point. And then I think psychologically, mentally, they could not go on for different reasons, but to go a third season like that again. And Liverpool have just done 97 when they lost the title to 1 point, as we said, 99 points when they won the title last season. Can they go again? Can they have another season at 95 plus points? Psychologically,
it's a fair point, like, because motivating themselves in empty stadiums as well, that's a challenge that they all face, because it's going to be hard for Liverpool to push themselves again with no Anfield experience, no fans, and it's tough, you know. It's,
and no recruitment.
I think that'd be
as well.
Exactly, yeah.
The recruitment side, and I mean, there's reasons for that. We touched upon the money. We'll be getting into that a little bit later as well. And Jurgen Klopp obviously addressed that too. I don't know. I look at this and I say, you know, this is where the skill of the manager comes in, right? And like, for example, I think Pep's decline, or City's supposed decline last season, probably is much simpler and probably has much more to do with the fact that Vincent Kompany leaves, who did get a lot of playing time that last season and helped paper over the fact that you had a lot of substandard defenders, and you don't replace him. Instead, you bring in Rodri. And I think that had much more to do with it over the course of the season. And even in the Champions League, I think they could have won. I mean, they knocked out Real Madrid. They could have won the Champions League if not for the fact, or at least challenged Bayern, if not for the fact that, you know, he decides to go and play silly buggers against Lyon and put out that weird team. So I'd be a little cautious with that. On United, are you as negative as Augie is?
No, I refuse to think that they're not going to strengthen their defence, whether it's someone who come in the back four, so probably either replace Lindelof or Shaw, or someone that would come and offer Solskjaer, you know, proper rotation, not just Brandon Williams or, you know, whoever
okay.
it is.
So are they,
because that would be crazy.
Okay, so you refuse to believe that, but then I'm going to throw this out to both of you. As far as I know, are they being linked, I mean, with a center back? I mean, we had someone with Upamecano a while back.
They've got regular and a left back. They're clearly looking at regular and a left back. I think left back, if they can go and get someone like Reguilón.
But then you still have Lindelof and Maguire in the middle.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. Yeah, of course. But, you know, Upamecano is not going to leave this summer, I think. It's too late now. They left it too late again. They could obviously look at other options like Koulibaly and stuff. But again, we're getting closer to October the 5th. There's only 3 weeks to go. And I don't know. I'm just amazed that they haven't done more business already.
Augie,
why are you amazed? Because this happens every year. It's happened every year for 7 years.
Because at some point, I think at some point they will learn from it. And it's like, do you know what?
What they never do.
But I know. But every summer I go in, or every transfer window, January or the summer, I think, okay, now they're going to do it a bit differently. Surely they've learned from the past. Surely they know that the sooner you get your people in, the better it is. Surely they know exactly where to strengthen, where they have weaknesses, where they can bring people in. They have money, okay, maybe not as much money as we thought they could have, but they certainly have money left to be able to invest this summer. And yet,
okay,
Van de Beek is the only
one. I have the solution. I'm gonna show him some love. Maybe this is the master plan. Maybe the master plan is you don't need a central defender because you're going to sign Reguilón, and then you're going to play a back three of Wan-Bissaka, who really is a central defender, Maguire and either Lindelof or Shaw, and then you're going to play Van de Beek. And because you have the three defenders, you can get away with Van de Beek, Pogba, and Bruno Fernandes as your three guys in the middle. You've got Reguilón on one flank. Up front, you can go Rashford Martial or Rashford Greenwood or whatever you want. And then the only problem is the right wing back position, who I don't know. Can you give me somebody to play right wing back?
Jugo Dalot for Sumensa.
Daniel James?
No,
whatever. They signed a right wing.
That's your football manager. Okay. Like,
yeah, I know. All right, maybe give him too much credit. Let's move on. Arsenal, they get Dani Ceballos is back on loan, which I think speaks volumes about the cash crunch at this club. We all like Arteta. We saw signs. We saw little green shoots. But then I look at this and your boy Aubameyang. I thought the deal was done 2 months ago. I thought they're just waiting to announce and he comes back and do social media. Yeah, don't worry.
Just to reassure you, don't worry. That's all I'm going to say. Don't worry. Arsenal fans, don't worry. Don't worry.
Okay.
But then I like that they go and get Gabriel to strengthen that back four. And I think initially they would play with a back three and then move to a 4-3-3 formation. I interviewed Saliba yesterday, and although he's only 19, he really impressed
Who's
me.
Who's your front three?
Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe. Aubameyang, Lacazette and Willian. Aubameyang, Lacazette and Willian is a pretty strong front three.
Yeah, and if you're Saka and Martinelli, you're doing backflips out of joy. No, you're going to get on the pitch
play.
A lot.
What? Well, yeah, they will have game time. Okay. I think he will rotate.
I was at the Community Shield, and I was really impressed by Arsenal's setup that day. Arteta's really focused on the defence and the midfield. It looks like a good unit now. But it all depends on Aubameyang being fit. And if Aubameyang, you know, God forbid, gets an injury that rules him out for a month, 2 months, 3 months, Arsenal, they've got a real problem. They haven't got anyone that can replace Aubameyang. And
what's wrong with Lacazette? Why does nobody respect Lacazette?
Give respect to the man. Come on.
Seriously, man.
I know he's losing his hair, but he's still a good player.
Do me a favour. Lacazette cannot replace Aubameyang. But Aubameyang is absolutely crucial for Arsenal.
Yeah, but I will tell you again that without Lacazette as a number nine, Aubameyang would not score as many goals coming from the left-hand side. And I think we could all say Lacazette is not clinical enough, which is true. But he's a very intelligent and very capable player for what Arteta wants his number nine to do. And I think, I really believe that one, Aubameyang could not play in that position under Arteta. This is not possible. And secondly, Aubameyang would not perform as well with another number nine, even Nketiah, even someone else than Lacazette. Not just because the way they get on, but because the way Lacazette plays, almost as a false number nine or second striker, if you want, to let Aubameyang being able to score as much.
I stick by what I said. I think you have to make a decision, Lacazette or Aubameyang. If you have them both, it's going to be really, really, really
painful.
What,
you would play Aubameyang centrally?
No. I would lose one of the two. Because
why?
Because Lacazette's entering the final 2 years of his contract. And so you either pay an enormous amount of money to Lacazette, to Alba, hoping that he performs until he's 34, and he's already an enormous amount of money, and you're not in a position where you've got bags of money, and you're on a rebuilding team, and you should be sticking with your kids and getting them playing time. Or or Lacazette's entering the last 2 years. You have to make a decision on him. You're going to have to extend him, or you're going to lose him for very little. I just don't see the logic. I didn't see the logic in adding Willian to this team. I don't see the logic in keeping and trying to keep Lacazette and Aubameyang, other than tying up huge gobs of money, not learning your lessons from Ozil, and making it harder for your talented player, your younger talented players, to stick around, because they're not going to get on the pitch, or they're going to demand, if they do well, they're going to demand contracts that you're not going to be in a position to pay, because you've given all your money to Lacazette and Aubameyang and Willian, and before him Ozil, and so on. And Socrates and David Luiz. I can go on and on.
No, anyway. It's an interesting debate, because there's a point as well that is Martinelli and Saka ready to take you into hopefully finishing in the top four.
You're not ready for the top four.
If you really put all your eggs in the young players' basket.
All right. Let's move on to Spurs. Augie, Mourinho famously said, I think, did he say that, like, if the season had started after the restart, they would have finished top four, I think, statistically, somehow, whatever. How gung-ho are you about where Tottenham are?
It's always hard to tell with Jose. I don't think that Jose will last very long at Tottenham. I just don't think that the players that he has there are a Jose players. I think it's going to be
Eric Dyer is 100% a Jose Mourinho player.
200%.
That's his bodyguard, man.
I'll give you that. And that is the problem, isn't it? If Eric Dyer is your kind of go-to guy,
it's
then... doesn't he miss the start of the season as well through suspension after his little foray into the crowd? I'm not sure, but...
I don't know.
I just think the one thing that will play in Tottenham's favour this year is that the fans out in the stadium so far, so they can't moan and complain at Mourinho's football, because it will kind of disappoint a lot of Tottenham fans. And again, it all depends on...
He will be pragmatic, and if he wins, they'll be happy.
Oh, that bile
against Mourinho. Dele Alli, you know, can he get the best out of Dele Alli again? Can he keep Harry Kane fit for a season? There's a lot of question marks at Tottenham. And again, they're a club that don't really change the face very often in terms of the players. I'd like to see a bit of change, but... Tottenham's like a tired team to me, and you're the tired manager as well.
All right, we've done our top six. I would like you all. We're going to play a little game now. We're going to play lip service for the rest of the Premier League, because we're only obsessed with the big clubs. I would like you to tell me which club outside the traditional top six. And I mentioned top six not by league, but simply by revenue. Because if you haven't noticed, whoever's number six in the top six this year, their revenue and their wage bill is like twice as high as everybody else. Okay, yeah. So there is a different league being played. So tell me who's going to finish highest out of the rest. Augie, I'll start with you.
I would probably say Wolves right now. I still think Wolves are a decent unit. You know,
a big Fabio Silva fan.
Fabio Silva.
Yeah, Everton's brought a lot of players in, and there's a few question marks on some of the players. I'm not quite sure how James Rodriguez will work out. It could be a sensation, or it could be anything but. Leicester... They tailed away so badly in the last season. I think
you don't need to mention all of them.
We asked you one. What I mean?
Yeah, but I'm just talking about... I think there's three or four contenders to finish seventh, so I'm just assessing...
Yes, I know. But
the question was, who will finish the highest? One club?
Leeds.
The idea is you mention one club and you talk about it, then I mention a different club. Joseph, so this way we hit another three clubs.
Well, I'll save you some time.
So your choice is Wolves, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. One club. What club has not Augie mentioned?
So No.
You know my pick, because I'm a romantic, as you know, being French, especially. I go for Leeds.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Dave,
I go for Bielsa.
Come on.
Let me explain.
No chance.
Yeah. Why not? No chance.
They were fantastic at Arsenal in the Cup side. I saw them a couple of times last season, and Leeds were great for that division. But one thing that they will really, really miss is Elland Road, in terms of the hostility it brings. And that is a big thing for Leeds.
Okay, but you know, if Sheffield United can take the way they play in the Championship and do so well, and then bring it to the Premier League and also do very well, I think that Bielsa and his players, who have been together for a long time now, who know exactly how they play, plus the very clever recruitment that they did already, and I think there's probably more to come between now and the end of the transfer window.
I hope you're right, because I think Leeds being an established Premier League club is great for the Premier League. But I'd like to see him have a season with Elland Road full and bringing back the experience. But I think one thing that could be a surprise this year is Newcastle. I think they bought well as well. I think Callum Wilson is a...
So you laugh at my Leeds and then you come up with Newcastle and Steve Bruce. You say that about Bielsa and Leeds, and then you come up with Steve Bruce. I mean, Marcelo Bielsa eats Steve Bruce for breakfast, right?
Well, you know, that's what they said about Chris Wilder 2 years ago. But, you
yeah,
know,
I think there is some merit, though, in, like, nobody expected Chris Wilder to do so well, right? And Sheffield United last season. And when you have a club that comes up and they play a different type of football, it takes time for teams to adjust. And I think they can take you by surprise. Because, I'm sorry, but Chris Wilder's team, apart from Billy Sharp, and and Basham, of course, Basham Bauer at the back. It is a bunch, and Henderson is a bunch of no names. Who'd ever heard of these guys if you don't follow the lower divisions, right? So there is something in that. And the way Bielsa plays is very different. And I think it can take people by surprise.
I mean, I know they brought Rodrigo in from Valencia, but, you know, Patrick Bamford won't score many goals in the Premier League. I'm sorry, he won't. And you know, they need.
I know, but his Twitter account's going to be really funny.
Sheffield United didn't have a prolific goal scorer, and they still did really well. You don't have really to have 25 goal a season striker to do well.
Nobody's mentioned Everton. I don't think you mentioned them briefly. You gave them short shrift. I got to stick up for my boy Carlo. Look, I don't. Obviously, on paper, I'm assuming they're going to have the highest wage bill outside the top six as well. I think that matters. He has signed players that he knows very, very well, especially, obviously, Alan and James, who he's worked with before. And he's kind of put his rep on the line to a degree. Everton have bent over for him and given him everything he wanted to a degree that he really hasn't had at his previous clubs. To some degree, maybe at Paris Saint-Germain, but certainly not at Real Madrid, certainly not at Chelsea, and certainly not at Milan. So I think this is interesting. This is almost like Carlo playing director of football as well. And I hope he got his sums right and can finish seventh.
Is Marcel Brands on holidays, or did Marcel agree to all of that?
You think? I'm assuming he did. Maybe Marcel Brands gets a little gems and Carlo gets the guys in trust. All right. Like I said, doing a Premier League preview when the window's still open for 4 weeks is kind of silly because it could all change. But hey, hope you enjoyed our conversation. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Jules, La Liga also kicking off this weekend, albeit without Real Madrid and Barcelona because of the whole thing that they played late in the Champions League, whatever. Again, I don't think we need to spend much time on this because the transfer window is still open. A lot of things are up in the air at a number of clubs. Atletico haven't really done much. Barcelona, well, we know about the dumpster fire there. But Real Madrid team really stable again.
Yeah, stability, which I don't think is a bad thing. Maybe had they had money available for it, they would have gone maybe for a couple of players in midfield, especially I think where this is probably where you need to find someone who then will replace Luka Modric up front. You need someone maybe who will replace Karim Benzema, because clearly Jovic, I don't think he's the right guy. So in an ideal world, maybe they would have spent, but I think right now Zidane would be very happy to have that status quo and keeping that bunch of players who've done so well for him, especially after the restart, to go and win the league and the way they did. Okay, it was disappointing in the Champions League, but I think they will go again and could be interesting.
I think one of the big things this season is also going to be whether guys like Isco and Asensio, who missed most of last year, but we know are phenomenal footballers, if those guys stay fit, then, you know, if you have a fit Isco playing, then replacing Modric, not so much of an issue,
right,
because
between
Valverde, Casemiro, Kroos, you know, you have your options there. They need, I think, Eder to continue to show that he can be, you know, the first alternative to the two center backs.
Yeah.
But otherwise, for me, they have to be favorites at this stage.
With Hazard has to, it has to be a different season. He has to be injury free.
It would certainly help, but I'll tell you what, I don't think it's that important.
I disagree with
you. I don't think it's that important because they have alternatives. I don't think Hazard has to be central to the plan. I mean, obviously, given what they paid for him, given what they are paying him in wages, sure. But if he doesn't have a big season or if he gets injured again, you still have Rodrigo, you have Vinicius, you have Isco, you have Central. You know, you've got a range of options. Barcelona, I don't know what we can say. We've covered Messi to death. Luis Suarez up in the air. We'll get to him in quick hits.
Yeah.
I think this is one where we just have to sit back and wait. But I wanted to ask you about Ansu Fati because, obviously, just a kid. Do you chuck him out there? Do you make him, at least at the start of the season, project him as a starter?
I think you need to go with the momentum that he's had and what he did with the national team. And really, now, if you don't start him, they're not playing this weekend, so he has a bit more time to know exactly what Koeman wants him to do. And then he has to start.
Who's your center forward then? Griezmann or Braithwaite?
I mean, that's a tough one.
Is he happy to play center forward for the good of the team? Because if we assume Suarez leaves, is he happy to play center forward? Because I know Barcelona linked with Depay, but I'm not sure they're going to bring another striker. Is Griezmann happy? You know the guy's mentality.
Yeah, I think
he would
be happy.
Can he make that adjustment?
I think anything but playing white. That would go with him. And then I think he will work. He will work with his relationship with Messi. He will work with his understanding with everybody else, with Fati and with Ousmane Dembele, for example, who I think will come back. And I think Koeman likes what he sees with Dembele. But it would be difficult, I think, for Koeman to find the right formula. Even without Memphis Depay, even if Suarez stays, I don't think it'd be easy.
Jules, obviously there's more going on in La Liga. Age-old question. You know, where's Atletico Madrid? Do they mount a challenge? This felt like a year of... Like, it felt like a summer of retrenchment. And again, I think maybe they're also feeling the hit financially.
Yeah, probably.
But there's time left, and can they break in the top two? What does it take? Do they need the Jose Felix to turn into the guy that his transfer fee suggests he is?
I would like to see Joao Felix with no injuries. We saw against RB Leipzig, for example, when he came on, what he can bring to this team, so different than everybody else. My only issue is Diego Simeone. I'm just not sure if what we saw in the Champions League, especially if that, okay, this is the end of that cycle. You can stay, but please try something different. Try something new. Don't put Marcos Llorente up front. You know, the guy was a centre-back, for heaven's sake. You know,
he's a second striker. He did all right when he did.
You know, who else plays Victor Lindelof as a second striker? No, but the more seriously, I really would like to see Simeone saying, okay, do you know what? Well, let's try something different, because clearly that didn't
really
work.
He did
really
try something
anymore.
Different last year. The thing is, he also had injuries to several players at the wrong time. I don't know. I think Atleti... I mean, we see what happens. I think they have a lot of guys who do have an upside, and they could come back better than they were last season. When I look elsewhere, you expect, I don't know, I'm drinking the Lopetegui Monchi Kool-Aid, so I'm expecting, wow us, there's some weeks left in the transfer window. Do
with
something
Rakitic,
special.
Rakitic instead of Banega?
Yeah, that not so much, but you know. But no, but look,
but yeah,
maybe,
they would
maybe
go.
So he needs.
But,
you know?
But again, maybe as well, financially, even if Monchi was so good to be able to buy players on a cheap, maybe it's a summer where they financially they're a bit more strapped up, and they can't maybe do this kind of stuff they would want to do. Although, as you said, you would expect him to come out with something great. Like, I don't know.
Again, difficult to talk about these teams with the window still open. Valencia, a dumpster fire again. Right,
that's a mess, right? I mean, clearly the Lim family doesn't care. Really doesn't care at all about. Well, I know they come out with saying like, this is our club, we do what we want if we want to. But what do they want to achieve? What's the idea, Gab? Because they're not to sell the club and make money on it. Not if you sell your best players. If Parejo goes and Coughlin goes and Rodrigo goes,
I'm. I don't want to get myself in trouble, so I'm not going to comment any further on. Peter Lim and the Lim family. And I know Valencia fans are difficult and demanding and whatever, but what's being done to certain clubs just isn't right. Villarreal, we were hopeful for them last season. Real Sociedad, are these the kind of teams that can kick on?
Yeah, Unai Emery, be interesting to see what he does. Although they lost Cazorla, but I think Dani Parejo is a great signing, and so is Coquelin, and so is a few others that they did. And, you know, they've been very clever in the way they build this team. Let's hope that Unai can do something good at a club that maybe is better fitted to him than the biggest club that he's been before. Real Sociedad, you've lost Odegaard. Can you still have the flow that they showed in the first half of the season? Because we saw after the restart that it was far more difficult for them. William Jose just tested positive for COVID as well, so that's not going to be easy. Athletic Bilbao, do you expect big things for them? They've got the cup final to play from last season to be played at some point.
I think actually Bilbao could be an outsider for the top four this year, depending how things shake out. Because again, there's issues and there's a lot of question marks elsewhere. But we're going to delve more into this when the window closes. All right, enough previews. In fact, I'm all previewed out, Jules. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Cristiano bags two goals as Portugal win away to Sweden in the Nations League. He now has 101 international goals, which puts him 8 behind Ali Dai in second place among the men. He's also 85 behind Christine Sinclair, if you expand it to men and women. Jules, it's a dead certainty he breaks the men's record. But is he going to break the overall record?
So the men's record, no doubt. I mean, it's pretty incredible when you look at it, and if you look at the numbers that he scored, 49 goals in 47 caps after the age of 30, which is really remarkable. I know you wrote that long piece not long ago about how his game has evolved, but still it's incredible. He's 35, he will beat Ali Dai, and I don't think then anyone ever will go and get Cristiano's record, whatever number he finishes with. But I think Christine Sinclair, the Canada legend, I think it's a little bit too far for him.
Plus, I don't think she's retired yet.
No, I think she's still playing. So she will go on and score.
Phenomenal story, Christine Sinclair.
England drew 0-0 with Denmark in the Nations League in a game so dire, Gab, that your old colleague at the Times and our old friend Henry Winter said it was so bad it should not even have been on television, let alone behind closed doors. What was the problem for Southgate there?
So he came out and he said, well, that he was more conservative in his team selection, and he said that it was...
To play Denmark.
Yeah, and the reason...
You have to be. Defensive. Well,
no, he said you had to be because you had the Greenwood Foden story when they were sent home for sneaking women into their hotel. And so, you know, now losing this, it would have caused a bad reaction in the media and so on. So you couldn't afford any screw up here. It was bad. I mean, you know, he tried the back three, and the kind of back three with Eric Dier in there, it's not going to work. He had a lot of absentees. But, you know, the front three is the real front three, Sancho, Kane, Sterling. Although, I think these guys look around and they look who's behind them and they say, meh, you know.
I just think that's the worst excuse that he came up with to justify his incompetence. That was the worst lineup he could have come up with, and yet he did. I don't understand the Southgate hype. I don't get it. For me, he's not good enough. And to have Rice and Phillips, two similar players in there with no creativity, no movement. They were on the same line all the time, next to each other. It was ridiculous. Yeah. I was fuming.
Not a game in which to experiment. Eden Hazard traveled with Belgium to play against Iceland and Denmark, but didn't get on the pitch at all, which rather annoyed Real Madrid. Do they have a point?
Yeah, 0 minute, nothing, just training, nothing at all. It was strange. And, I think...
Well, why didn't he stay and train with...
I don't know, and especially with Thibaut Courtois going back after he had a real injury, whatever it was. But for Hazard to stay the whole 10 days with the national team, not even playing, when he's had an injury before, his pre-season at the same time...
It's a weird one.
I think Real Madrid are allowed to be...
It's a weird one.
Italy look impressive when they beat Holland on Monday night, Gab. However, the bad news of the night was that Nicolò Zaniolo got another really bad injury.
Yeah, it's his second ACL injury in the last 8 months. This kid, hugely, hugely unlucky. It was on the other knee, which I suppose is a good thing rather than the same knee re-injuring.
I guess.
But it's definitely a huge blow. And look, players have come back better and stronger. And I think it's when you know, When I tweeted out, like, oh, look, but hopefully he comes back strong. People says, oh, yeah, who's come back stronger? Oh, wait. And so I did a little bit of research, and I'll tell you who's come back stronger. Ale Del Piero came back stronger. Xavi came back stronger. Alan freaking Shearer came back stronger. Roberto Baggio, heard of him?
I was going to say that
he
was my
came
next
back
one.
Stronger. Yeah. So, yeah, it does happen. Chelsea have given Christian Pulisic the number 10 shirt. Jules, is this a big deal?
I love it. I think number 10 is still very special. And I think don't look at me like this. As a romantic, I want to believe that you give your number 10 to your best player, pretty much. I know it's not always like this, but I think if you're Christian Pulisic right now and you have the number 10, you feel epic. You feel like, yeah, let's go, bring it on. I love it. Good on them and good on him. Liverpool haven't bought a starting quality player. I mean, you're a bit harsh there, but since Fabinho and I listened to years ago, this is your words.
It's not harsh.
I know, but okay.
Who have they bought in the last 2 years?
Club says it's because they're a different club. They're not owned by an oligarch or by a state and this and that. Is he being fair or is he just a bit whining because he hasn't got really the recruitment that he wanted?
Facts, and we touched upon this on Monday. If you know the blogger Swiss Ramble, he has an excellent thread explaining why Liverpool are in this situation, and they're in this situation because obviously they've been hit by the pandemic. And people might say, well, how is it possible they make all this profit? That's accounting profit. That's not cash flow.
Yeah.
Liverpool have very low working capital, and part of the reason they have low working capital is they don't have an Abramovich or a Mansour who just pumps cash into the club. Although
you can't really do that anymore. I mean, this is like...
No, but you can do it on a cash basis. Yeah, this is a cash issue. It's not an FFP issue.
No, it's purely
a cash issue. And also FSG, the owners, haven't been willing to take on more debt. Basically, they're running the club like you would run a business, which is funny because they're businessmen. Your pal Gareth Bale is in the news again, with the Telegraph suggesting Real Madrid are happy to pay half his wages if somebody takes him on loan. Other reports say they'll let him go for $25 million. Meanwhile, surprise, surprise, he returned from international duty with a knock that kept him out of training. Not much to say.
You don't believe him that he's injured? Yeah, I believe him. Listen, he came out with words and said, I want to go. It's Real Madrid who didn't want me to go before. Right? They blocked my move last summer to China. They did this, they did that. I think it's not difficult, is it, for everybody to agree? Either you just free him and he can go wherever he wants if he wants to, or you try to sell him. But I don't have the feeling that Real Madrid are really pushing to sell him either. They don't really do everything they can to do so. Otherwise, he would have gone, no?
No, because...
He says he wants to play. Why is he not leaving?
Take a pay cut. Nobody can afford you.
But surely he knows that.
Real Madrid.
Surely he knows that. So when he says, I want to leave...
So maybe he doesn't want to play.
I know you're
part Welsh, but you know, at this stage, we're going to get to the point where he's just going to wait and run out his contract and then go somewhere free.
He's 31, though. He needs to play. Another Real Madrid player, by the way. James Rodriguez moved to Everton is official. However, there's a little different coverage in the price. Some people say it's 25 million. Others say it's free with a selling on clothes. What do you believe?
Well, 25, much as I love Carlo, 25 million for a player on his wages, who only had 1 year left on his contract.
And he's 29.
And he's 29 years old. Seems like an enormous amount of money, frankly. So I genuinely don't know, but I'm going to make my appeal to everybody out there. Why can't we have transparency? It all comes out in the wash. We had this with Havertz, right?
Yeah.
Where we had different people, they're just like 30 million apart, the price Chelsea paid for him. Why can't we have transparency? Football people, what are you hiding?
Well, we have it with Porto. We'll come about in a bit. And maybe that's what people want to avoid.
Not the best week for Mason Greenwood. First, he and Phil Foden get sent home from the England team after they break quarantine rules and invite two ladies back to their hotel, who, of course, film everything on Snapchat and then put on social because, hey, that's how you roll. Now it emerges that he's been renting out an Airbnb in Manchester and hosting raucous house parties. Jules, is this going to affect him on the pitch?
I don't know. I hope not. I really thought he was a mature kid. The way he came back after the restart, and he looked sharper, he looked fitter, he looked even stronger. I thought, okay, yeah, this kid works hard, he does well, and then he goes and does stupid things like this. I don't know who is advising him, who is around him. How can you let an 18-year-old rent out Airbnb houses to host parties during the confinement when you know the rules. It's beyond me. And then the girls in Iceland this season. I guess everybody makes mistakes. He's still very young. Let's hope he learns from it. But I really hope that that's not going to derail him for...
Yeah, he's got to compartmentalize it so it doesn't affect him on the pitch.
Yeah, let's hope so. But I'm just not convinced. Luis Suarez took to social media, Gab, to slam what he called fake news. What was he talking about?
I beats the hell out of me. I mean, the picture showed him training with Barcelona, so maybe the fake news is that he's left Barcelona
to go to Juventus. But surely there was some truth in that, right?
I think we know for a fact that they've been talking to Juventus, and you know there was a whole business with him getting an Italian passport because the rules in La Liga are different than in Italy. Obviously, not an EU player. I'm assuming he's referring to that. I don't know. Wouldn't it be a great story if this actually part of the whole power play, which nobody said was a power play? In the end, Messi says, "You know what? Let's keep Luis another year." Seriously, why not? Let's keep my mate.
That can't happen. I mean, that cannot happen.
Jules, you're more fashion conscious than I am, so I know you're dying to talk about Manchester United's third kit.
The worst kit ever. One of the worst kits ever. The zebra kit, as we can call it already now. I don't know who came up with it. I don't know who managed to convince United it was a good idea. But you know, your theory is that no one cares about third kit. It's
no, just, I mean, my theory is I don't care. Unless
what
you're
do you mean
a
you
child
don't care?
Under
is
the
it,
age of 12.
It's to make money. If the kit is ugly, no one is going to buy it. What's the point? What's the point?
Whatever. What a third kit. Come on.
But still, people buy third kits. They buy first, second, third kit. If it's ugly, no one's going to buy it. What's the point then?
Yeah, there's a word for them. They're called full kit, something that rhymes with bankers. That's what it's called.
Still, people buy it. If you're not going to make money out of it, what's the point? I thought it was a shocking decision by United, who have been so good marketing-wise for so long. And
the fact that we've spent the last 45 seconds talking about their kit means that they get more PR. So maybe in the end, they're smarter than
you are. Let's see. I will go to Old Trafford when fans are back and then see. Well, talking about fans, it's a good segue. It looks like fans could be back. Well, at least the idea was that they could be back in October the 1st. But Gab, it looks very unlikely, right, with the rises again in positive cases.
Yeah, this is news from the last 24 hours, and there's been a spike in certain areas in England, and the pilot scheme where they were going to send a certain percentage of fans back in England, that now seems to be uncertain or on hold. We may have to wait a little while longer. At the risk of sounding like corny Captain Obvious, this is the new normal. This is what you have to deal with. It's going to be harder to plan things longer term. But the good news is I think they're still going to try to do things when the pandemic allows it. Out of their hands, out of their control. French enfant prodige, Eduardo Camavinga. Sorry, am I saying Camavinga, which is clearly not a French name in a French enough accent? Or
Camavinga.
Camavinga, there you go. Is linked with Paris Saint-Germain, or just FC Paris, or just Paris.
No, it's not.
But Thomas Tuchel says they're not playing Monopoly. Jules, shed some light on this.
Well, first of all, congratulations to Camavinga for making his debut for the national team at 17 years old and 303 days, which made him the youngest since 1914. To start to make his debut for the national
team. Who was it in 1914? Let's show him some love.
Maurice Garuter, something like that.
All right.
Yeah.
Little before. But we'll ask Robbo to give us
Maurice,
a tactical breakdown.
Yeah. Maurice, good on you, Maurice. I don't think he's still alive, but hey. But Camavinga was outstanding as well. I thought in the 30 minutes he played against Croatia. Well done to him. And now almost comes the difficult part in the sense that he will stay with Rennes this season. He will discover the Champions League straight into the group stages as well. So not that awkwardness of going through the playoffs, etc. We will see, you know, what really he's about in that kind of competition. Same in Ligue 1. I think he will come back with the national team as well, even if this time he was called up because Pogba was positive and was out because of the virus. But, you know, if you're PSG, what do you do? I think Camavinga appeals to any top clubs in Europe. It's just that no one can.
You wait, you sell Mbappe next summer and buy Camavinga.
Yeah, or maybe you try to get a deal, some sort of deal do now. You loan him back to Rennes, he does the season at Rennes, and then comes to you next summer. Because I do think that if you wait another year, he will go to Real Madrid, he will go to Juventus, he will go to City, to United.
A year from now, he's going to be still 18 years old. I don't know about that.
Yeah, but he will be very expensive next summer, especially if he has the season that everybody expects him to have because he's just so good. He's a phenomenon. The one that you see once in a generation is incredible. It really is incredible.
I thought that was Ryan Cherki.
But Shirky is younger. Shirky has only turned 17 not long ago.
And they're both 17 years old. If you had to pick one, your money's on Camavinga right now, yeah?
Different players.
Who's going to have the better career? You're leaning Camavinga right now. It's fine.
Just because you need to.
I'm going to ask you this every single year.
Serie A have confirmed they're going to sell 10% of their commercial and broadcast rights to a private equity fund. Gab, what does this mean? And are you on board with this?
Yeah. So basically, I think this is something that works for Serie A. I don't know if it would work for somebody else. But there's two big private equity funds. I think it's in excess of $1.5 billion that they're paying for 10% of effectively. The money that Serie A makes from commercial sponsorship rights and broadcast rights. The reason this is important is that it means Serie A will have some grown-ups in the room when it comes to going and marketing the leagues and selling to broadcasters. Because sad to say, there's too many people, too many club owners in Serie A, and this has been part of the problem historically. They don't see each other as business partners. The strength of the Premier League is that even when you have all these alpha males and oligarchs and sheikh this and that and a bunch of Glazers, but when they got behind that room, they might have argued inside the room, but when they were outside, they spoke with one voice and they understood that they're all teammates, they're all business partners to grow the league.
But the Premier League works like a company, like a corporation.
In theory, Serie A is as well, but it's not in real life because people always look like, ooh, let me get one over on him and whatever. They've never cooperated. Hopefully, this will bring some level of professionalism to the table as well as access to capital. You know, with 10%, they're going to have what they call negative control, which means they can veto bad ideas, essentially. And I think that alone is going to help in the longer term. And it's something we might see more of elsewhere in the future.
See this as being a bit dangerous because, as you said, they will have the right to veto stuff. They can veto bad ideas, but they could also maybe veto ideas that are not good for them, if you see what I mean. Or 10% doesn't actually make that much difference.
I mean, I haven't seen the contract, so I don't know. And the things are structured differently. But presumably what they want to see is a growth in revenue and a growth in the league, right? Otherwise, they're not going to go and tie their money up that way. That's not what private equity does.
No, of course.
Personally, I think it's a positive. Porto have reported to the Portuguese Stock Exchange, as they have to do, that out of the 40 million fee paid by Wolves for 18-year-old Fabio Silva, and who I remind you has made one top flight start in his career and played less than 200 minutes, 10 million of that is going in agent fees. And of that, 7 million is going to Jorge Mendes, who incidentally isn't actually Fabio Silva's agent. Does this make sense to you?
So what makes sense is that Wolves, you know, gambles in a way, I guess, on a very, very talented young player. Very unproven, as you said, one start, I think one goal, something like that. In Portugal, only 18, all of that. But if you don't buy him now, maybe he will be priced out for you later on. So, okay, on that level, I don't have too many issues. I've seen him play with Portugal youth teams. He's fantastic. He looks fantastic. Great. Obviously, what you've got issue with is what you've just explained, the commissions for the agents and Jorge Mendes having such a central role once again, and not just with Fabio Silva, but with a lot of things.
Gestifoot is part-owned by the people who owned Wolves. This is the key issue here. Yeah. So, to me, this seems like bad corporate governance. And a conflict of interest. It is not illegal. Let me say this to Wolves. It is not illegal.
And Jorge Mendes has done some really good things at Wolves. Have done really well, thanks to him as well.
It can also kind of feel like if all I cared about was the kid's interests, for example, then, you know, maybe I don't move to Wolves now, or maybe I don't move to Wolves for this kind of transfer fee. I try to wangle a different deal so that then maybe I can get a better deal for myself. This is the whole issue. When you've got one guy who is effectively influencing both clubs at both ends, and the player's agent and the player, this is why people have an issue.
And Porto needed the money. And I guess that probably covers the worries that they could have had with FFP and with.
I mean, you had this last year with Bruno Jordão and Neto. Now, Neto turned out to be a very good player. Bruno Jordão, perhaps a little bit less so. But I don't want this to be the new normal, basically.
No, and it's not. It's only with Jorge Mendes, really. No one else has this kind of position anywhere else, right?
Yeah, and it's not just. I mean. I think what stuns is that at Wolves, it's official, right?
It's
written
so.
In there. At other clubs, he's obviously extremely influential.
But you see why we were talking earlier about the transparency and we want to know how much James cost exactly at Everton. But you could see why some agents are probably very reluctant to it, why some clubs are also very reluctant to it, to make it all transparent.
You make everything
because then
transparent,
you've got things
you've
like
got,
this.
Yeah, well, look, listen, depending, I believe the game belongs to the fans, ultimately.
Yeah, no,
right?
Me too. I'm
and
with
if
you
everything
completely.
Is transparent, you have to, you can be held to account by the fans. A lot of Wolves fans are very happy with the setup, and rightly so, because the team's doing very, very well. They're right up there in Europa League. I mean, from a results perspective, from a feel-good perspective, this has been tremendously good for Wolves. So
yeah, exactly.
Make all this stuff public.
Yeah.
Let's have more of this.
Yeah,
not
true,
less.
I guess. True, I guess. And finally, Gab, Bayern Munich and Hansi Flick said goodbye to Ivan Perisic.
They probably said auf Wiedersehen.
Yeah, auf Wiedersehen. You're right. Decided not to pursue him or try to get him from Inter. They don't need him. And then for Inter, this is bad news, right?
Yeah, because you have another guy on big wages who's coming back. I think Perisic played really well last season.
He did well.
You know, here comes Leroy Sané. You have Leroy Sané and Kingsley Coman and Serge Gnabry and Thomas Müller. You don't need Ivan Perisic.
Yeah.
I think it was always going to be, I think the agreed fee was 20 million if they wanted to make the deal permanent. Obviously, there would have been some wiggle room on the wages. Probably could have had him for less, but they looked at him and they said, at his age, I don't really need this dude. So I think it is a bit of a headache for Inter because now they're getting back a winger who has shown that on his day he can be really, really good on a team that doesn't play with wingers. So what do you do then?
And also, did they need that money, or that kind of money, to then reinvest to strengthen in
and sign N'Golo Kanté as they keep insisting?
No chance. Leave him alone.
It's so weird. It's so. I'm sure there's a price at which Chelsea would let N'Golo Kanté go. I don't think he's central to Lampard's plans the way it was before.
Why isn't it? Why isn't he central? Well, of course he should be. Kovacic is not going to defend like N'Golo Kanté does in midfield in a team that is going to be so attacking-minded already. If you saw him with France the other day against Sweden, for example, even against Croatia, he was incredible. And you watch him and you say, like, how can they even think about, okay, maybe we could let him go?
The thing is, he hasn't really played in that defensive midfield position. I know we're digressing on Chelsea, but hey, it's Kanté. We love Kanté. He hasn't really played in that defensive midfield position that he played for Leicester or with Antonio Conte at Chelsea in his 2 years there, except for with France. He hasn't played that position in two years.
Chelsea would play 4-2-3-1, right?
We think. We don't know.
He's the best in that two pivot in front of your back four.
So play him with Kovacic or Gilmore.
That's perfect.
Maybe even Jorginho if he stays. But we don't know that Chelsea going to play 4-2-3-1.
No.
Because there's 100... I mean, it's just one of the fun things about Chelsea is, yeah, there's some bits that work in 4-2-3-1 and other bits that do not work so well in 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, there's more things that work in 4-2-3-1, right?
We saw them play a lot of 3-4-3 last year, right?
Yeah, but they didn't have Kai Havertz in their squads or Timo Werner.
Well, Timo Werner is not your problem. If you've assured me he's going to play center forward.
Yeah,
so play Kai Havertz behind him
or Mason Mount behind him or whoever.
Or Hakim Ziyech.
Or Hakim Ziyech behind him. But even if you play 4-2-3-1, there's still enough room for Pulisic and Havertz and Ziyech.
I generally
don't know. And Kanté behind.
Is this something we're going to revisit? This quick hit was supposed to be about Hansi Flick and Bayern. So Bayern don't need him. Inter, I don't know if you can adapt him to play as a second striker, but then you already have Alexis to back up Lautaro and Lukaku. I don't know. Can we think of a Premier League team?
Let me think.
Was there a Premier League team that was heavily linked to him when they were managed by a Portuguese guy?
Maybe
and has been linked
in
to
red or in zebra kit. Did they play in zebra kit?
I don't know. Like, short term, Perisic. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
All right, this brings us to an end. Enough of all this. We haven't mentioned the historic event that took place in the NBA. I know you're an NBA fan. But we got to give a shout out to Canada's finest.
Finest.
Steve Nash, who is the first
football player.
Top footballer,
yeah,
I would say, to be trusted with coaching an NBA team.
It's a bit
team.
The Ted Lasso, but in, you know, in reverse, reverse in other sports. Yeah, so good
absolutely.
Luck to him.
Yeah, like I you know, this is pretty cool. I can't wait.
Super cool. Well done, Stevie.
Do you think this means that Pop might replace Jose Mourinho at Spurs?
Oh, my God, imagine. I would love Pop to come to.
That'd be awesome. All right, enough of that. Till next time. Bye-bye.